You know that feeling when you're just drowning in articles, maybe some reports, a whole stack of notes, and you're really trying to get your head around a pretty important topic.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Like, how is a major company, a real giant in its field, actually navigating this incredibly complex, always changing landscape?
It's tough to piece together.
Well, you've definitely come to the right place for that kind of aha moment.
Hopefully, yeah.
Today, we're embarking on a deep dive. We're looking into Palo Alto Networks, Inc., often called PANW, right, for short.
That's the one. Pan W.
They're a name that tops up constantly in the news, I feel like, especially with some of their pretty bold strategic moves recently.
Definitely been making waves.
And we've got this comprehensive investment research analysis as our sort of core source material for this deep dive.
Yep, really detailed stuff.
And it's truly a goldmine. I mean, not just for understanding this one company, but for really grasping the bigger picture of the whole cybersecurity world.
It really is. And our mission in this deep dive is, well, exactly that,
Okay.
to cut through maybe some of the jargon,
Yeah.
and get right to the core of what makes Palo Alto Networks a, well, a global leader.
Right, what makes them tick?
We'll explore how they're strategically adapting to these massive, like, fundamental shifts in technology.
Things like cloud AI.
Exactly. That rapid adoption of cloud computing, the accelerating integration of AI into, well, seemingly every aspect of business now.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And we'll also try to unpack what their pretty aggressive platformization strategy really means.
Platformization. Okay, that's a key term.
It is what it means for their own future growth, and also, frankly, for our increasingly digital world, a world that relies more than ever on, really robust security.
Absolutely critical.
So to do that, we'll meticulously examine their foundational business, where they started. We'll look at the dynamic market they operate within, their financial performance, the numbers story,
Always important.
and crucially, the big strategic bets they're making right now to secure that leadership position.
So, if you're curious about how one of the biggest players, maybe the biggest player in cybersecurity, is trying to make our digital lives safer,
Or just want to get a handle on the market.
or if you simply want to understand the intricate dynamics of the cybersecurity market without feeling, completely overwhelmed by all the tech speak,
Yeah, it could be a lot.
then you're definitely in the right place. Stick with us.
Let's do it.
We're going to unpack this fascinating company,
Yeah.
understand its trajectory, and see exactly where it's headed in this, rapidly evolving landscape. So to really understand Palo Alto Networks today, I think we have to rewind a bit, don't we?
Absolutely. Got to look at the origins.
It's pretty remarkable when you think about how they've grown. They certainly didn't start as this, comprehensive cybersecurity giant we see now.
No, not at all. Much more focused initially.
They began with a very specific and actually quite disruptive idea back in 2005, headquartered out in Santa Clara, California.
Right, Silicon Valley roots.
Their vision right from the start was, incredibly ambitious
It really was.
to create a world where each day felt genuinely safer, more secure than the one before.
A big goal, a noble one, maybe.
And they really kicked things off with a foundational innovation. They pioneered what were known as next-generation hardware firewalls,
Oh, my lips.
NGFWs.
Yeah, that was a key term back then.
And this was just a massive leap forward at the time, wasn't it?
Oh, huge. Because these new firewalls could intelligently inspect application traffic.
Right. Not just the plumbing, but what's flowing through it.
Exactly. And move far beyond the old, simpler port-based firewalls that just looked at, where data was going, basic addresses and ports.
Like a bouncer checking IDs versus someone actually knowing who's coming into the club.
That's a good analogy. The old ones were blind to what the data actually was. Palo Alto Networks fundamentally changed how network security was approached with that.
Okay, so that initial disruption.
What's truly fascinating here, and really this was a major aha moment for the whole industry,
Okay.
is that their initial innovation wasn't just, another product hitting the shelf.
Right. More than just hardware.
It was a fundamental paradigm shift in how network security was perceived, how it was
A
implemented.
whole new way of thinking.
Yeah. Before Palo Alto Networks, firewalls were, well, largely considered pretty basic traffic cops at the edge of the network.
Just open or close gates.
Pretty much
Yeah.
allowing or denying traffic based on simple stuff like ports, protocols. Like you said, they were blind to the actual applications running over those ports.
So Facebook, Salesforce, whatever it was, just looked like generic traffic.
Exactly. Palo Alto Networks introduced this concept of application awareness.
Application awareness, okay.
Meaning their firewalls could understand, identify, and actually control specific applications like your examples, Facebook or Salesforce, regardless of the port they happen to use.
Ah, so bypassing the port trickery.
Precisely. This much deeper level of inspection allowed for far more granular control and, crucially, much more effective threat prevention.
Mm.
This foundational innovation really set the stage for their future evolution. It started transforming them from just a hardware vendor into a much broader, more intelligent security provider.
Laying the groundwork.
Absolutely. Laid the groundwork for everything that came next. That move towards software, services, the whole platform idea.
Speaking of evolution, a really significant change, a big inflection point, came in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Big year.
That's when Nikesh Arora joined as chairman and CEO. Now, he arrived with a pretty formidable reputation, right? Big roles at Google, SoftBank.
Yeah, very high profile hire, came with a lot of expectations.
So how significant was his arrival in shaping the company's trajectory? He's widely seen as the architect of a major strategic pivot, isn't he?
Absolutely. He gets a lot of credit, and rightly so.
Pushing them much more aggressively towards a software and subscription-driven model, kind of shifting away from those hardware roots.
That's exactly it. He really accelerated that pivot. It was already starting, perhaps, but he put the foot on the gas.
And really leaned into what they now call a platformization approach, using that to tackle these increasingly complex security challenges.
Yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Arora's arrival marked a very deliberate, strategically critical move.
Okay.
A move away from the, let's call it, cyclical nature of hardware refresh cycle.
Right, where you sell a box, then wait 3 to 5 years for the next sale.
Exactly. In a hardware-centric business, revenues can be lumpy. They're heavily dependent on customers' capital expenditure budgets, their CapEx.
Which can swing wildly with the economy.
Precisely. By emphasizing software and subscriptions, Palo Alto Networks aimed for much more predictable, smoother, and ultimately higher margin recurring revenue streams.
The ARR, annual recurring revenue, the holy grail for software companies.
That's the metric everyone watches. And this platformization idea isn't just about selling more software licenses.
No, what's the deeper play?
It's about deeply embedding their security services across a customer's entire IT ecosystem, network, cloud, endpoints, the works.
Making themselves indispensable.
Making themselves incredibly sticky, very difficult to displace once you're embedded that deeply.
Great high switching costs.
Massive switching costs. It creates a much more defensible long-term business. And you can really see this shift in their revenue composition. It's quite stark.
How so?
If you look at, say, their fiscal third quarter of 2024 results.
Okay, recent numbers.
Subscription and support revenue surged to nearly $1.6 billion.
Wow.
While the product revenue, the traditional hardware side, was only about $390 million.
Huge difference.
It means recurring revenue now accounts for roughly 80% of their total revenue.
80%? That's a massive transformation.
It really underscores that while hardware might still be a crucial initial point of entry for maybe acquiring a new customer,
the foot in the door,
the real long-term value, the sustained growth, it's overwhelmingly captured through those high-margin software subscriptions. It was a complete reorientation of the business model under Arora.
Okay, before we dive even deeper into Palo Alto's specific structure, their platforms and strategies, let's maybe zoom out for a second. Look at the industry itself.
Good idea. Context is key.
Because cybersecurity, I mean, it isn't just a nice to have anymore, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. Long gone are those days.
It feels truly non-negotiable, like a mission critical priority for pretty much every organization on the planet now.
Board level conversations, C-suite priority number one, often.
And the market reflects that, right? The global cybersecurity market is incredibly robust, driven by what analysts call non-discretionary demand.
Meaning companies have to spend on it. It's not optional.
Exactly. We're talking about a market projected to be somewhere between, what, $180 billion and maybe $245 billion this year alone.
Massive numbers and still growing fast.
Yeah, it's not slowing down. Experts expect a strong compound annual growth rate, CAGR, of maybe 12% to 14% through the end of the decade.
Which is phenomenal growth for a market that large.
So what makes this sector so resilient, even when you see broader macroeconomic downturns? Cybersecurity spending seems to hold up pretty well. Why is that?
That's a great question. And the resilience you're seeing, even during, you know, tougher economic times, it really stems from its elevated status. Like you said, it's a board-level priority now.
The risk is just too high not to spend.
Exactly. Companies simply cannot afford to cut corners on security. the potential cost of a breach. I mean, think about it. Reputational damage, regulatory fines, massive operational disruption, loss of customer trust.
It can be existential for a company.
It absolutely can. That potential cost far, far outweighs the cost of prevention. So budgets tend to be protected.
Okay, so that explains the resilience. But what are the underlying forces creating this just massive and sustained demand? You said it's more than just more bad guys.
It is, although the bad guys are definitely getting smarter and more active. But there are bigger, more structural forces at play. Well, a huge foundational driver is the rapid digital transformation and cloud adoption that nearly every business is going through.
Right. Everything moving online, moving to the cloud.
Exactly. As operations, applications, critical data fundamentally shift from, you know, those on-premise data centers tucked away in the basement.
The old server rooms.
To these sprawling cloud environments, AWS, Azure, GCP, often a mix of them.
Multi-cloud.
The traditional perimeter-based security models just break down. Those digital moats around your corporate castle, they just don't work anymore because there is no single perimeter.
The perimeter has dissolved, basically.
It really has. This forces a complete rethink. It necessitates massive investment in new security architectures built on different principles.
Like zero trust.
Exactly. Zero trust principles, where nothing inside or outside the network is implicitly trusted. Everything needs verification. And architecture is designed specifically for these distributed multi-cloud settings.
Okay, so digital transformation, cloud adoption, huge driver.
A primary, undeniable driver. And it directly fuels the adoption of cloud-native security platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Palo Alto Networks' Prisma Cloud, which we'll get into.
Makes sense. What else?
Then there's the relentless evolution of the threat landscape itself and the increasing use of AI by the adversaries.
AI on the offense side too now.
Oh, definitely. Cyber attackers aren't just more sophisticated and frankly better funded these days. Some operate with almost nation state level capabilities.
Right. Organized crime, state actors.
But they're actively leveraging AI and machine learning to automate their attacks, to scale them, to find vulnerabilities faster, to craft more convincing phishing emails. It makes them harder to detect and defend against.
So the defenders need AI too.
They absolutely do. Hmm. Consider the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, the IC3. They reported a 10% year-over-year increase in public complaints just in 2023.
Just complaints, not even total incidents.
Exactly. It just underscores the rising volume and complexity of malicious activity. So, to counter these advanced, often AI-powered threats, enterprises are compelled to adopt more intelligent, AI-driven defense mechanisms themselves.
Which plays right into platforms like Cortex XIM.
Directly supports the value proposition of advanced platforms like Cortex XIM. Yes, we'll definitely unpack that later.
Okay, so evolving threats, AI attackers.
Mm-hmm.
What else is driving demand?
We also can't forget the sort of permanent shift now to remote and hybrid work models.
Right. The pandemic changed everything there.
It fundamentally changed the game. It completely dissolved that traditional corporate network perimeter we talked about.
Because employees are everywhere now. Coffee shops, home offices.
Exactly. Securing a distributed workforce connecting from anywhere on any device requires totally modern security approaches. Things like SaaS, Secure Access Service Edge.
SaaS. Heard that acronym a lot.
You will. And ZTNA, Zero Trust Network Access. Think of SASE as essentially taking all the traditional security you'd find in an office, firewalls, secure web gateways, VPNs, and delivering it as a cloud service.
So the security follows the user, wherever they are.
Precisely. It ensures secure, fast access while replacing those older, often clunky, and less secure legacy VPN solutions.
Okay. Makes sense in the modern workforce.
And finally, there's a growing complex web of regulatory and compliance mandates.
GDPR, CCPA, all those privacy laws.
Exactly. GDPR in Europe, various state-level privacy laws in the U.S. like the CCPA in California, industry-specific requirements like HIPAA for healthcare or PCI DSS for payments.
It's a minefield for companies.
It is. And these regulations are forcing organizations across pretty much every sector to invest heavily in a robust security controls, not just for protection, but simply to avoid significant financial penalties and, maybe just as importantly, severe reputational damage.
Right. Losing customer trust is huge.
Huge. So these aren't just, you know, short-term trends. These are fundamental structural shifts creating persistent non-discretionary demand that will continue for years to come.
It's clear why the demand is so strong, just relentless.
Mm.
But it's also a massive market and historically a very messy one.
Oh, incredibly messy. Fragmented is the word usually used.
I've heard that term vendor sprawl used quite often to describe it.
That's the perfect description, vendor sprawl.
Because this industry has traditionally been characterized by just extreme fragmentation.
Yeah.
You have so many point solutions for every little niche.
Dozens, sometimes hundreds of vendors playing in the space.
So many enterprises, especially the bigger ones, find themselves managing, what, dozens of different, often non-integrated security tools from a whole multitude of different vendors.
Yeah, it's not uncommon to see 50, 70, even more security tools in a large enterprise.
You can just imagine the nightmare that creates. Constant security gaps because the tools don't talk to each other properly.
Integration challenges are massive.
Astronomical operational overhead, just managing all those different consoles and licenses, and a huge strain on already limited security teams.
Who are already overworked and hard to find, as we'll discuss.
But the good news, I guess, for companies like Palo Alto Networks, is that this pain point, this vendor sprawl nightmare, has created a really significant active trend now.
Yes, a counter trend.
Market consolidation. Customers are now actively, desperately seeking ways to reduce their number of security vendors.
They want simplification. They want integration.
And instead adopt integrated platforms from a smaller set of more strategic partners.
Exactly. This desire for consolidation is absolutely a central pillar of Palo Alto Network's strategic narrative. It's a key driver of their growth. They're positioning themselves as the consolidation platform.
The answer to vendor sprawl.
That's the pitch.
It's also worth highlighting, I think, that within this vast market, cloud security is just unequivocally the fastest growing segment, isn't it?
By far. Some forecasts project over 25% CAGR for cloud security specifically.
Wow. That ties directly back to those digital transformation and cloud adoption trends we just talked about.
Absolutely. It's where the workloads are going, so it's where the security spending needs to follow and follow quickly.
And from a customer perspective, the large enterprise segment, they account for the biggest share of spending, right?
They do, which is logical, really. They have the most complex IT environments. They have significantly larger budgets, obviously.
And they're the biggest targets.
And they have greater exposure to those sophisticated targeted threats we discussed. So they need the most advanced solutions.
Geographically, North America is still the largest market.
It is, yeah. Reflects its mature tech landscape. But emerging markets, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region, are expected to grow at the fastest rate going forward.
So big future expansion opportunities there.
Definitely. For all the major players.
You mentioned the strain on security teams.
Yes, the talent shortage.
This point about vendor sprawl and the move towards consolidation, it seems absolutely critical. And it links directly back to Palo Alto Network's integrated platform strategy.
It really does. And there's another major underlying force at play here driving that consolidation trend.
Okay.
It's the persistent and frankly severe shortage of skilled cybersecurity professionals.
Right. You hear about this constantly. Not enough people to fill the job.
It's a huge problem. This isn't just, you know, an inconvenience for companies. It's a massive demand driver for advanced security platforms.
How so? How does a talent shortage drive demand for platforms?
Well, as organizations struggle immensely just to hire and retain the talent they need to manage this complex array of disparate security tools.
Which is already a nightmare, as we said.
Right. It's a constant source of stress for chief information security officers, the CISOs. So the value proposition of a highly automated, highly integrated platform increases dramatically.
Because it reduces the need for so many human eyeballs.
Exactly. Solutions like Cortex XIM, which we'll delve into, promise to radically reduce manual effort. They accelerate incident response through sophisticated AI and automation.
So the platform does more of the heavy lifting.
Precisely. They effectively act as a force multiplier for these overburdened security teams. They allow them to do more, achieve better security outcomes with fewer people.
Freeing up the humans for the really complex stuff.
That's the idea. Allows analysts to focus on high-level threat hunting and strategy rather than drowning in low-level alerts. So this dynamic transforms the talent gap from just an operational headache for companies into a powerful demand driver for platforms like Palo Alto's that offer efficiency, automation, and intelligent threat detection. It makes the platform pitch even more compelling.
So, okay, given all these complex challenges, the evolving threats, the move to cloud, vendor sprawl, the talent shortage, and these massive tailwinds driving demand.
Yeah, complex picture.
How exactly does Palo Alto Networks position itself to not only tackle them, but really capitalize on them?
Right. How do they harness these forces?
It really seems to come down to what they call their, well, ingenious three-platform architecture.
That's the core framework, yes. Strata Prisma Cortex.
And this isn't just like a marketing slogan, is it? It feels more fundamental.
No, it's much more than marketing. It's a fundamental design choice, a strategic blueprint. It's designed specifically to secure the three critical domains of the modern enterprise IT landscape.
Network, cloud, and security operations.
You got it. Network, Strata, cloud, Prisma, and the Security Operations Center, or SOC Cortex.
And it acts as a clear framework for customers to actually achieve that consolidation we talked about.
Exactly. It gives them a roadmap, a way to consolidate their security vendors, move towards a more integrated, unified defense posture using Palo Alto as the backbone.
What's really clever, I think, is that this strategic framework actually mirrors the modern enterprise's tech stack itself, doesn't it?
It does align very well. You've got the traditional on-premise infrastructure.
Covered by Strata.
Right. You've got the dynamic multi-cloud deployments. Prisma.
And you've got that critical need for continuous monitoring and rapid response in security operations.
Cortex.
This alignment makes it an incredibly potent sales tool, especially when talking to CISOs.
Because it speaks their language.
It speaks their language, and it offers a rational path forward. CISOs are constantly looking for ways to rationalize those sprawling vendor lists, simplify their security operations, reduce complexity, and ultimately, of course, improve their overall security posture. This three-platform approach gives them a structure for doing that.
Okay, let's break them down then, starting with Strata.
Right, Strata. Let's start there, which is really the evolution of their original foundational business.
Back to the NGFW roots.
Exactly. As you mentioned, Palo Alto Networks pioneered those next-generation firewalls, and Strata represents the continuous cutting-edge innovation on that core strength.
So it's not just firewalls anymore.
No, it has evolved significantly. From those initial machine learning-powered NGFWs, it's become a complete zero-trust network security solution.
Zero trust again.
Mm-hmm.
So never trust, always verify.
That's the mantra. It doesn't just block or allow traffic at a basic level like old firewalls. It verifies every user, every device, every application trying to access resources, constantly evaluating risk before granting access.
Even for traffic already inside the network.
Especially for traffic inside the network. That's a key tenet of zero trust, eliminating the idea of a trusted internal zone.
Okay, so what are the key components within Strata?
Well, you still have the company's robust portfolio of physical and virtual firewalls. They form the bedrock of network defense.
The actual hardware and software firewalls.
Right. These are managed through Panorama.
Panorama.
Panorama is their centralized security management system. It allows network admins to have unified control and visibility across the organization's entire network security infrastructure, from the on-prem data center firewalls to virtual firewalls in the cloud, all managed from one place.
So simplifies management.
Hugely. And crucially, Strata also now includes a comprehensive secure access service edge offering SASE.
SASE again. Okay, part of Strata.
Yes. Their SASE solution combines two key capabilities. First is Prisma Access.
Prisma Access. Isn't Prisma the cloud platform?
Ah, good catch. It's a bit confusing naming-wise, but Prisma Access is part of the Strata SASE offering. It's specifically designed for securing remote workforces wherever they are, providing secure, optimized access back to corporate applications.
Okay, so secures the users connecting from outside.
Exactly. And the second part is Prisma SD-WAN.
SD-WAN, software-defined wide area networking.
Right. This provides cloud-delivered security and simplified network management for distributed branch offices, connecting branches securely and efficiently back to the cloud or data center.
So Prisma Access for remote users, Prisma SD-WAN for branches, all under the Strata SASE umbrella.
You got it. This integrated approach firmly positions Palo Alto Networks as a leader in securing the modern distributed network perimeter, which is absolutely critical in today's remote hybrid world where that traditional network boundary has, as we said, largely disappeared.
So Strata is like the unified gatekeeper for all network traffic, no matter where it originates or where it's going.
That's a great way to put it, the foundational layer of network control and security.
Okay, Strata handles the network. Now, this next one feels particularly fascinating, especially with that explosion of cloud adoption we keep talking about. Prisma.
Yes, Prisma. This is undeniably a key growth engine for them right now.
As enterprises increasingly migrate their workloads, their applications, their sensitive data to public clouds like AWS, Azure, GCP, or hybrid environments.
Prisma has emerged as a primary driver of the company's overall growth. It's built for that cloud world.
and it's designed to provide what they describe as the industry's most complete cloud-native application protection platform, CNAPP.
CNAPT, yes. That's the category Prisma Cloud competes in, and they aim to be the leader, offering security literally from code to cloud.
Okay, from code to cloud. What does that really mean in practice? Sounds comprehensive.
It is. From code to cloud is a critical concept in modern cloud security. It means Prisma Cloud aims to cover every single stage of the cloud application lifecycle.
The whole lifecycle.
The whole thing, from the very beginning when developers are actually writing the code on their laptops.
Shift left security.
Exactly, shifting security left into the development process. Through the continuous integration and deployment pipelines, the CI/CD pipelines, and all the way to runtime, when the application is actually live and serving users in the cloud environment.
So securing it before, during, and after deployment.
It's a holistic approach. It's not just about securing the cloud infrastructure itself, but the entire lifecycle of the applications running on it.
What are some of the core capabilities within Prisma then?
Well, its core capabilities include essential functions like cloud security posture management, or CSPM.
CSPM, checking for misconfigurations.
Exactly. CSPM constantly scans cloud environments. AWS, Azure, GCP, helps identify and remediate misconfigurations that could leave a company vulnerable. Things like leaving a storage bucket open to the internet, a surprisingly common source of breaches.
You hear about those all the time.
All the time. Prisma also provides Cloud Workload Protection, or CWPP.
CWPP.
This secures the actual applications, the containers, the serverless functions, the data running in the cloud, protecting them from threats during operation, not just checking the infrastructure settings.
So CSPM for the infrastructure posture, CWPP for the running workloads.
You've got it. And through recent strategic acquisitions, they've aggressively expanded into really important emerging categories.
Like what?
For example, they've moved strongly into data security posture management, or DSPM.
DSPM, focused on the data itself.
Precisely. This came via the acquisition of a company called Dig Security. DSPM focuses specifically on discovering, classifying, and protecting sensitive data across complex multi-cloud environments, finding where your crown jewels are and making sure they're locked down.
Super important with all the privacy regulations.
Absolutely critical. And very timely, they've also pushed hard into the security of artificial intelligence models and applications.
Securing AI itself.
Yes. With the acquisition of Protect AI, they've integrated those capabilities directly into Prisma Cloud.
Okay, so Prisma is really trying to be the one-stop shop for cloud security.
That's the ambition. Their stated goal here is pretty bold. Prisma Cloud is aiming to be the first pure-play cloud security business, meaning just focused on cloud security revenue, to achieve $700 million in annual recurring revenue, ARR.
$700 million ARR just from cloud security. Wow.
It shows how critical this platform is to their overall growth story. It's built for the multi-cloud reality that almost every large enterprise lives in today.
Okay. Strata for network, Prisma for cloud, and finally, Cortex.
Cortex X.
This platform is all about bringing intelligence and, maybe more importantly, automation to the often overwhelmed Security Operations Center, the SOC.
That's a target, yes. Yeah. The SOC.
How exactly does Cortex aim to revolutionize the SOC? Because that sounds like an incredibly challenging environment to operate in.
It is. The SOC is typically a very high-stress environment. Analysts are often plagued by what's called alert fatigue.
Just too many alerts, most of them noise?
Exactly. Drowning in alerts, thousands, maybe tens of thousands a day, many of them false positives. And they're stuck performing manual, repetitive investigation processes.
Sounds exhausting and inefficient.
It is. Hugely inefficient and prone to error. Things get missed. Cortex aims to fundamentally revolutionize this whole process by leveraging advanced AI and automation.
Okay. AI to the rescue for the SOC.
That's the core idea. The flagship offering here is Cortex XIM.
XIM. That stands for?
Extended Security Intelligence and Automation Management. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Okay. How does it differ from older tools like SIEMs?
Think of legacy SIEM tools, security information, and event management as basically massive databases or lakes of security logs.
It's collecting everything.
Collecting everything, yes. But then analysts often have to manually sift through those logs, try to correlate events across different tools, figure out what actually matters. It's incredibly time-consuming and, frankly, often ineffective against sophisticated attacks.
Finding the needle in the haystack.
A very large, very complex haystack. Cortex XIM, by contrast, positions itself as an AI-powered detective.
Okay.
It automatically ingests data from across the enterprise, uses AI to analyze it, connects the dots between seemingly unrelated events across different security domains, network, cloud, endpoint, identity, figures out what's a real threat, and even suggests or initiates automated response actions.
So transforming security chaos into clarity, hopefully.
That's the goal. Transforming the SOC from a reactive alert chasing function into a more proactive, intelligent, and automated operation.
How does it integrate data? Where does it get its fuel?
Its core functionality involves integrating data from a really wide range of sources across the Palo Alto Networks ecosystem and beyond. It pulls in endpoint data via Cortex XDR.
XDR, their endpoint detection and response solution.
Right. It pulls in network logs and threat intelligence from the Strata platform. It gets cloud security alerts and context from Prisma Cloud. And increasingly, identity information, too.
A unified data lake for security.
A unified, intelligent data lake. By applying sophisticated analytics and automation, which includes capabilities inherited from Cortex XOR, their security orchestration, automation, and response platform.
XOR, yeah.
XSIAM enables security teams to detect threats much more accurately, filter out the noise, and crucially remediate incidents at a significantly faster pace. Cut down that response time from days or weeks to minutes or hours.
That directly addresses that cybersecurity talent shortage we talked about earlier, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It acts as that powerful force multiplier for security teams. It automates the mundane, repetitive tasks, freeing up those scarce human analysts to focus on the most complex threats, strategic initiatives, threat hunting, rather than just chasing endless alerts.
Okay, these platforms sound powerful and integrated, but this market is just brutally competitive, isn't it?
Oh, intensely so. Yeah, brutal is a good word.
Palo Alto Networks certainly isn't playing alone here.
Not by a long shot.
Their competitive landscape includes, what, a mix of traditional network security incumbents, those nimble cloud-native specialists, and even the formidable tech behemoths, the cloud providers themselves.
It's a really diverse and aggressive set of players they're up against.
So who are their main challengers? Who keeps them up at night?
Well, let's look at some key rivals across their different platforms. First, you have Fortinet.
Fortinet, hear their name a lot too.
Yeah, they're a very direct competitor, especially in the core firewall and the SASE markets, overlapping significantly with Strata.
How do they compare?
Fortinet is really known for delivering high-performance security appliances and software at a very compelling price point. They've actually become the market leader in terms of the total number of firewall units shipped globally.
More boxes shipped than Palo Alto.
Yes, particularly strong in the small and medium-sized business segments, the SMB market, largely due to their cost-effectiveness and their very broad integrated portfolio.
So Palo Alto's counter to that.
Palo Alto Networks consistently positions itself as the premium technology-leading solution, particularly for large, complex enterprise environments, where maybe performance, advanced features, and deep integration are valued more than just the lowest price.
The premium brand strategy.
Exactly. This strategy allows them to command a larger share of the overall market revenue, despite shipping fewer units. They focus on value and advanced capabilities rather than just volume. Different segments, different strategies.
Okay, so Fortinet on the network side. Who else?
Then there's CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike, big name in endpoint security.
A definitive leader in the cloud-native endpoint security market, yeah. Focusing on endpoint protection platforms, EPP, and especially endpoint detection and response, EDR, their Falcon platform is highly regarded.
Why is it so well regarded?
Generally seen as very effective, easy to deploy, strong threat detection capabilities, all delivered via the cloud. They really disrupted the legacy antivirus vendors.
So how does Palo Alto compete there? With Cortex XDR?
Exactly. Palo Alto Networks' Cortex XDR is a formidable competitor. Its key advantage is potentially deeper integration with Palo Alto's own network, Strata, and Cloud Prisma data sources, offering a more holistic XDR expended detection and response vision.
So better context beyond just the endpoint.
That's the pitch. But Cortex XDR faces a significant challenge in displacing CrowdStrike's very strong brand recognition and their established leadership specifically in that endpoint domain. Many customers already have CrowdStrike deployed and are happy with it.
Scuff to rip and replace.
Very tough. Brand loyalty and incumbency are strong forces there.
Okay. Fortinet for network, CrowdStrike for endpoint. Who else is a major rival?
We absolutely can't forget Zscaler.
Zscaler. They seem focused on cloud security too, specifically that SaaS area.
Exactly. Zscaler was a real pioneer in cloud-native network security, particularly leading the Security Service Edge, or SSE, component of SaaS. SSE is really about securing user access to the web, cloud apps, and private apps.
So competing with parts of Strata, like Prisma Access?
Directly competing, yes. Zscaler has a strong first-mover advantage in delivering security purely from the cloud. They have a very focused strategy that resonates particularly well with organizations that are aggressively adopting a cloud-first approach.
How does Palo Alto's offering compare?
Palo Alto Networks' Prisma SaaS offering, again, combining Prisma Access and Prisma SD-WAN under the Strata umbrella, is a direct and arguably more comprehensive competitor. It integrates a broader set of network security capabilities, including their NGFW technology.
More features, maybe.
Potentially more features, tighter integration with their firewalls, but it definitely has to contend with Zscaler's specialized focus, their established leadership, and strong brand perception, specifically within that cloud-delivered security edge market.
That's a strong set of direct competitors right there. But what about the real giants, the ones who actually own the cloud infrastructure itself?
Ah, yes, the hyperscalers.
Amazon, Microsoft, Google, they're increasingly offering their own native security tools within AWS, Azure, and GCP. That seems like a potentially huge threat, doesn't it?
It's a crucial point. And yes, it represents a significant long-term competitive threat, particularly for the cloud security business, Prisma.
How so? What are they offering?
Well, all the major public cloud providers, AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud Platform, they all offer an expanding portfolio of natal security services. You see this with products like Microsoft Defender for Cloud, AWS Guard Duty, Google Security Command Center, and many others.
And what's their advantage?
They have a distinct built-in advantage. These tools are deeply integrated into their respective cloud platforms. They're often bundled with other cloud services, sometimes even offered for free at a basic tier.
Making them easy to turn on.
Very easy. And they might be perceived by many customers, especially smaller ones, or those heavily committed to a single cloud, as good enough for basic security needs.
The good enough security problem.
Exactly. For an organization that's fully committed to, say, only using Azure, Microsoft's native tools can be quite appealing because of that seamless integration and potentially simplified billing.
So how does Palo Alto Networks defend against that? What's their counterargument?
Their primary strategic defense against these hyperscalers, their key differentiator, is multi-cloud capability.
Ah, securing across all the clouds.
Precisely. The reality today is that the vast majority of large enterprises operate in a multi-cloud environment. They use services from AWS and Azure, or Azure and GCP, or even all three. Very few are standardized on just one.
Right. Different clouds for different workloads.
Exactly. And this is where a platform like Prisma Cloud truly shines, because it provides a single unified console, a single pane of glass to manage security policies, monitor the security posture, detect threats across AWS, Azure, and GCP simultaneously.
Something Microsoft can't do for AWS or Amazon for Azure.
Exactly. No single cloud provider can offer that kind of unified security management for its competitors' platforms. They naturally only secure their own environments well. This multi-cloud oversight gives Palo Alto Networks a unique and compelling advantage.
Helping customers manage the complexity of securing workloads spread across all these different cloud silos.
That's the value proposition. Consistency and visibility across the entire multi-cloud estate.
Okay, so given all those powerful competitors, Fortinet, CrowdStrike, Zscaler, the hyperscalers themselves, what's Palo Alto's real secret sauce? What truly makes them stand out and allows them to maintain that premium position against such formidable rivals?
I'd say their core differentiator, their primary competitive moat, is undoubtedly that integrated platform approach we keep coming back to.
The sum is greater than the parts.
That's the idea. Offering a truly comprehensive solution that spans network, Strata, cloud, Prisma, and security operations, Cortex, all from a single vendor, all designed to work together.
Directly addressing that vendor sprawl pain point.
Directly. It really appeals to those large enterprises that are just desperate to reduce complexity, lower their total cost of ownership by consolidating vendors, and achieve significantly improved security outcomes through that deep integration and automation.
It's the best in platform argument versus the best of breed argument from the specialists.
Exactly. A CISO might consciously choose a Palo Alto product that's maybe, arguably, slightly less performant in one specific niche compared to a standalone best-of-breed tool.
Okay.
If its seamless integration with the rest of the Palo Alto platform saves their security team significant time, reduces manual errors, eliminates integration headaches, and provides better overall visibility and context.
That operational efficiency and improved overall posture might be more valuable.
It often is, especially for large, complex organizations. That integrated approach can be far more valuable than marginal performance gains from a collection of disparate tools that don't talk to each other.
What else gives them an edge?
Their scale and distribution are also huge advantages.
Their massive customer base.
Exactly. With over 80,000 enterprise customers globally, including, I think, most of the Global 2000,
wow.
Palo Alto Networks possesses an incredibly powerful installed base. This provides a significant and highly efficient channel to cross-sell its newer, high-growth platforms like Prisma and Cortex into that existing base.
Lower customer acquisition costs for the new stuff.
Much lower. They already have the relationship, the trust, the contract vehicle. And finally, you can't discount their technology leadership and brand.
Their reputation.
Yeah. They are consistently recognized as a leader in multiple critical cybersecurity categories. Firewalls, SACR, CNAPP, by influential industry analyst firms like Gartner and Forrester in their magic quadrants and waves.
Those reports carry a lot of weight with buyers.
They really do. It reinforces their brand as a premium, trusted security partner, especially among the largest and most demanding organizations worldwide.
Now, you mentioned identity earlier. Mm-hmm. How does that fit into their competitive moat, especially against someone like Microsoft?
Ah, yes. The identity play, this is absolutely crucial, particularly as a competitive response to Microsoft.
Why Microsoft specifically?
Microsoft's key advantage in the enterprise security space, arguably, is the deep native integration of its various security products with its dominant identity platform, Azure Active Directory, now known as Microsoft Entra ID.
Which almost every enterprise uses.
Well, pretty much. This deep identity integration enables incredibly powerful context-aware security policies across Microsoft's ecosystem. So the proposed $25 billion acquisition of CyberArk.
CyberArk, a leader in identity security, specifically privileged access management, PAM.
Exactly. That acquisition is a direct, massive strategic response to neutralize this key Microsoft advantage.
Building their own identity pillar.
Precisely. By acquiring CyberArk and making identity security a fourth core platform, Palo Alto Networks aims to infuse that rich identity context, who the user is, what their privileges are, is this access normal across its entire ecosystem, Strata, Prisma, and Cortex.
Creating truly identity-aware security across network, cloud, and SOC.
That's the vision. To disrupt the traditional IAM market and offer a more unified, identity-centric security posture, directly challenging Microsoft's integrated approach. It's about owning and securing the digital identity from end to end across all interactions.
Okay, all these strategic moves, the platform approach, the competitive positioning, it sounds incredibly promising on paper. But the real question for investors, for observers, is how is it all translating onto the balance sheet? Let's pivot to the numbers.
Right, the financial story. Does the strategy actually work financially?
And the financials, looking back, they really do tell a compelling story of transformation, don't they?
They really do. A significant shift.
Illustrating their shift from maybe a growth at all costs mindset in the earlier days to one focused on sustainable profitability and strong cash flow generation more recently.
Yeah, a maturation of the business model.
Looking at their historical performance, say from fiscal 2019 through fiscal 2023, the numbers are quite impressive.
Solid track record during that period.
Total revenue more than doubled, right?
Yeah.
Expanding from around $2.9 billion to nearly $7 billion.
Yeah, that represents an impressive compound annual growth rate, CAGR, of approximately 24% over those 4 years. Strong top-line growth.
And that period was truly defined by their successful pivot to that recurring revenue model we discussed.
Absolutely. The subscription shift was key.
Subscription and support revenue grew from about, 62% of total revenue back in fiscal 2019 to over 77% by fiscal 2023.
A huge jump, significantly improving the predictability and the quality of their overall revenue stream, moving away from those lumpy, less predictable hardware sales cycles.
And maybe most importantly, financially, they achieved a critical milestone during that time.
The profitability inflection point.
Exactly. Transitioning from consistent GAAP net losses, which they had for years.
Right, investing heavily in growth.
To substantial GAAP profitability. After reporting a net loss of about $267 million in fiscal 2022, the company generated a net income of almost $440 million in fiscal 2023.
That's a massive swing in just 1 year. Over $700 million improvement on the bottom line.
What drove that inflection?
It was really a combination of that sustained strong revenue growth hitting scale combined with much more disciplined operating expense management. It truly demonstrated the powerful operating leverage inherent in their increasingly software-centric model. As revenue grows, profits grow faster.
And what about cash flow?
Concurrently, their cash flow generation was exceptionally strong. Free cash flow grew impressively from around $820 million back in fiscal 2020 to over $2.6 billion in fiscal 2023.
Wow, $2.6 billion in free cash flow.
Yeah. These numbers really underscore the financial success of that strategic transformation towards software, subscriptions, and ultimately profitability.
Okay, so that period showed strong growth, strong pivot to profitability. But recent quarters you mentioned have introduced some maybe complexities, things investors need to unpack.
That's right. The picture has become a bit more nuanced lately. We need to look at the more recent performance for a complete view.
So let's look at their most recently reported quarter, Q3 fiscal 2024, the one ending April 30th, 2024. How did they do?
Well, the company continued to deliver solid top-line growth. Total revenue increased by about 15% year over year, reaching nearly $2 billion for the quarter.
Still double-digit growth, respectable.
Decent growth, yeah. And importantly, this growth was driven almost entirely by that subscription and support segment, which surged by nearly 20%.
Okay, showing that recurring engine is still firing.
It is. Meanwhile, the product segment, the hardware side, saw very little growth. It increased by a mere 0.7%.
Basically flat. Further highlighting that successful shift to recurring revenue.
Exactly. But, and this is the complexity, a key point of concern for investors emerged in that same quarter.
Okay, what was it?
It was a sharp deceleration in billings growth. Billings only increased by about 3% year over year in Q3 FY24.
Only 3%. After seeing 15% revenue growth, that sounds like a mismatch. Why the slowdown in billings?
It definitely caused some alarm in the market, yeah. Management has directly attributed this slowdown to a very specific, deliberate, strategic shift in its sales motion, particularly for these large platformization deals we've been talking about.
The big consolidation deals. How did the sales motion change?
Essentially, to secure these larger, multi-year, multi-platform commitments from customers, which are strategically vital, they started offering more flexible, deferred payment terms.
So letting customers pay later or spread payments out more.
Exactly. Instead of maybe getting a large upfront payment covering multiple years, they might bill annually or even allow for more back-end loaded payment schedules.
Why would they do that? Seems like it hurts cash flow.
Strategically, it's aimed at winning those bigger deals, making it easier for customers to commit to a larger platform purchase within their annual budget cycles. But, as you noted, this change in go-to-market strategy does defer cash collection and, critically, billings recognition to future periods.
Which naturally impacts the near-term billings growth number, even if the underlying deal value is strong.
Precisely. It makes the billings number look weaker in the short term, even if they're signing large, valuable, long-term contracts.
Okay, that makes sense. So despite the billing slowdown, how did profitability look in that quarter?
That's the other side of the coin. Profitability actually continued to improve significantly. The GAAP operating margin expanded quite nicely, hitting almost 9% in Q3 FY24.
Up from what the year before?
Up significantly from around 4.6% in the prior year quarter.
So costs are still being managed well, margins improving.
Reflects ongoing cost discipline and, of course, the increasingly favorable margin profile of that heavily subscription-based revenue mix. Software margins are good.
So this divergence, strong underlying revenue growth, improving margins, but weak near-term billings, that's the key dynamic investors are wrestling with right now.
It's arguably the most critical dynamic in the company's recent financial profile that needs careful understanding, yes.
Okay, so if billings are slowing down, at least temporarily, because of this strategic shift to more flexible payment terms on big deals, what's the best way for us, as informed observers, to track the company's underlying health? The actual business momentum.
Yeah, that's the crucial question. If billings isn't the best short-term indicator right now, what is? And that's where remaining performance obligations, or RPO, comes into play as a really critical metric.
RPO. Okay, define that for us again.
RPO represents the total value of contracted future revenue that has not yet been recognized. Think of it basically as the company's backlog of signed deals.
So all the money customers have committed to spend in the future, even if it hasn't been billed or paid yet.
Exactly. It's the total future revenue locked in under contract. And in that same Q3 fiscal 2025, where billings growth was only 3%, RPO grew a very healthy 19% year over year.
19% RPO growth versus 3% billings growth. That's a big difference.
Huge difference. And the implication here is profound. That strong RPO growth indicates robust underlying business momentum. It shows strong long-term customer commitments.
It shows customers are signing those big multi-year platform deals, even if the billing is deferred.
Precisely. This arguably makes RPO a more reliable indicator of the company's long-term business health than billings, especially during this specific transition phase, where they're intentionally changing payment terms for strategic reasons.
So RPO is maybe the true north metric right now?
Many analysts would argue yes, RPO, and particularly current RPO, CRPO, which is the portion expected to be recognized as revenue in the next 12 months, are better indicators right now.
What's the primary risk then in relying on RPO?
The primary risk, the big question for investors, is discerning whether this billing slowdown is truly just a temporary distortion caused by this deliberate go-to-market transition.
A temporary blip.
Or if it's actually the leading edge, the first sign of a more fundamental slowdown in underlying demand, perhaps due to increased competition or macroeconomic pressures finally catching up.
Is the strategy working or is the market softening?
That's the billion-dollar question. And that's what investors will be watching extremely closely in the coming quarters, the interplay between RPO growth and billings growth. They need RPO to stay strong to validate the strategy. So let's talk about that core strategy driving the future platformization. This is truly the heart of Palo Alto Networks' long-term vision.
Right. Convincing customers to ditch the sprawl.
It's all about convincing customers to consolidate those disparate security products they've accumulated over the years and move on to their integrated platforms instead.
Consolidate onto Strata, Prisma, and Cortex.
Ideally, yes, or at least two of the three to start. The value proposition they're pitching to the customer is incredibly compelling on paper.
What is it boiled down?
A dramatic reduction in complexity, fewer vendors, fewer consoles, easier management, a lower total cost of ownership, theoretically, by eliminating redundant tools and operational overhead, and most importantly, significantly improved security outcomes through that better integration, automation, and unified visibility we talked about.
Makes sense. What are the benefits for Palo Alto Networks themselves?
For PAN-W, success in this platformization strategy translates directly to huge benefits. Significantly higher customer lifetime value, selling more services to each customer. Increased revenue predictability through those sticky long-term subscriptions. And formidable switching costs.
Making it really hard for customers to leave once they're bought in.
Exactly. Once an enterprise has standardized its network security on Strata, its cloud security on Prisma, and its SOC on Cortex, all integrated together, ripping that out and replacing it becomes an incredibly difficult, costly, and risky proposition.
It's like becoming the operating system for enterprise security. Very sticky.
That's a great analogy. That's the goal.
So how are they doing with this strategy? Are customers actually consolidating?
They are actively pursuing this, especially with their largest customers. As of that Q3 2024 report, management said that approximately 900 of its top 5,000 customers had been fully platformized.
Meaning they'd adopted two or more of the core platforms.
Correct, landing two or more platforms. Now, 900 out of 5,000 might seem like a relatively small number still.
Yeah, less than 20%.
But remember, these are often their largest, most complex, and most valuable customers. Getting those big fish fully onto the platform is key. And this initiative, this platformization push, is the foundational pillar for the company's very ambitious long-term financial target.
Which is?
Achieving $15 billion in Next Generation Security, or NGS, annual recurring revenue by the fiscal year 2030.
$15 billion in ARR just from the newer security areas by 2030. That's a huge number.
It's a massive target. NGS ARR basically includes Prisma and Cortex, the high-growth recurring revenue streams. Setting that target is a clear signal of their deep confidence in this consolidation trend and their ability to capture a huge chunk of it.
Okay, platformization is the overarching strategy. But within that, those two segments, cloud security with Prisma Cloud and SOC automation with Cortex XIM, they feel like the real growth engines, the stars of the show.
They absolutely are positioned that way, yes.
And Palo Alto Networks is being incredibly aggressive here, aren't they?
Yeah.
In trying to capture leadership in these rapidly expanding markets.
Extremely aggressive. You're right. These are their prime growth engines. Cloud security, as we noted, represents the largest single growth opportunity in the entire cybersecurity market. Forecasted CAGRs over 25%. It's enormous.
So how are they attacking that Prisma Cloud opportunity?
Palo Alto Networks is aggressively pursuing leadership in this CNAPP segment with Prisma Cloud using a multi-pronged strategy. It's not just one thing. There's significant organic innovation. They've developed new capabilities internally, like cloud detection and response, or CDR, extending advanced threat detection specifically into dynamic cloud environments, finding threats within the cloud itself.
Building new features.
Right. But simultaneously, they've been very active with targeted mergers and acquisitions, those tuck-in deals, to rapidly add best-in-class technology in key emerging areas where maybe they didn't have it internally.
Faster than building it themselves.
Exactly. A great example we mentioned is the purchase of Dig Security for Data Security Posture Management, DSPM, bringing in that specialized capability for finding and securing sensitive cloud data quickly.
And the Protect AI acquisition for securing AI models.
Another critical one, bringing in technology specifically to secure the AI models and applications that customers are building and deploying on cloud platforms. This combined organic R&D and inorganic M&A approach aims to position Prisma Cloud as one of the most comprehensive CNAPP solutions available.
Covering all the cloud security bases.
That's the goal. Now, for SoC automation and AI, the strategy with Cortex XIM is arguably even more disruptive.
Disrupting the legacy SIEM market.
Exactly. Aiming to truly disrupt and ultimately replace the legacy SIEM market leaders with their AI-driven Cortex XSIEM platform. As we discussed, traditional SIEMs often struggle with that alert overload, manual processes, slow response times.
XSIEM promises to fix that with AI and automation.
That's the promise, and it seems to be gaining significant traction. Management noted that cumulative bookings for XSIEM had already reached $400 million as of Q3 2024.
So customers are buying into the vision.
It appears so. Customers are clearly looking for ways to automate their security operations and drastically reduce those incident response times. And a major accelerant to this XSIEM strategy is that landmark partnership with IBM announced back in May 2024.
Right, the Curidar deal. That seemed huge.
It was huge. As part of that agreement, Palo Alto Networks is acquiring IBM's Curidar SaaS assets, Curidar being one of the largest legacy SIEM platforms out there with a massive installed base.
So they're buying IBM's cloud SIEM business.
Essentially, yes. And in return, IBM becomes a preferred partner for migrating its extensive base of on-premise and managed Curidar customers over to Palo Alto's Cortex XSIEM.
Wow, IBM helping migrate its customers to a competitor's product.
Well, a partner's product now. And what's more, IBM's massive global consulting organization, they have over 1,000 security consultants just dedicated to the Curidar business, will now be trained on the entire Palo Alto Networks portfolio, including XSIEM.
So gaining a huge sales and migration channel overnight.
It's potentially massive. This strategic maneuver could allow Palo Alto Networks to leapfrog years of grinding organic competition for SIEM market share. They're effectively co-opting a major competitor's distribution channel and customer base to accelerate XSIEM adoption.
That's an incredibly bold, potentially transformative move for the whole SemSecOps market.
Very bold. High risk, high reward, potentially.
Okay, so platformization, pushing hard on Prisma and Cortex, the IBM deal. What about expanding their reach geographically and through partnerships?
Yes, that's another key growth vector. Beyond specific products and platforms, they're also actively expanding their reach globally and deepening strategic partnerships.
Where's the focus geographically?
While the Americas, especially North America, remains its largest market by far, Palo Alto Networks sees significant future growth potential in the EMEA region, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and also the Asia-Pacific region.
Why those regions?
Digital transformation is rapidly accelerating there, maybe lagging North America slightly, but catching up fast. And consequently, cybersecurity spending is also ramping up significantly as businesses and governments digitize.
Any evidence of success there?
Yeah, in that Q3 FY24 report, for instance, their EMEA revenue grew a strong 20% year over year. That demonstrates the potential is real.
And partnerships. How important are they for this global push?
Absolutely critical. A key component of their international strategy, and even domestically, is cultivating deep alliances with the major global systems integrators, the GSIs, and large consulting firms.
The Accentures, Deloittes, Capgeminis of the world.
Exactly. For example, they recently announced an expanded global partnership with Deloitte. The goal there is to leverage Deloitte's deep industry expertise, their C-suite relationships, and their extensive global client base to accelerate the adoption of Palo Alto Networks platforms, especially within large, complex, multinational corporations.
Because those firms can help with the implementation and strategy around platform consolidation.
Precisely. These partnerships are absolutely crucial for scaling their reach effectively, navigating the complexities of different global markets, and delivering the comprehensive consulting and implementation services that large enterprises demand when they undertake a major security platform transformation. They can't do it all themselves.
This brings us neatly to their most dramatic growth strategy, perhaps, the really big bets, particularly that massive proposed CyberArk acquisition.
Ah, yes, the elephant in the room, $25 billion.
This isn't just a tuck-in acquisition to add a feature, is it? This feels fundamentally different.
No, you're absolutely right. It's far from a tuck-in. The use of large-scale transformative M&A is a very clear and central part of their strategy now.
Not just enhancing existing offerings.
No. It's about entering entirely new, large adjacent markets and significantly expanding their overall total addressable market, their TAM, basically growing the pie they can compete for.
And the proposed $25 billion acquisition of CyberArk, announced in July 2025, is the clearest example of that.
By far the clearest, most audacious example of this strategy in action. This move marks their formal, very serious entry into the multi-billion dollar identity security market.
Establishing identity as a new core platform alongside network, cloud, and SecOps.
Exactly. A fourth foundational pillar for their entire security ecosystem. This isn't just buying another product feature, it's buying a whole new foundation, a whole new market category for them to build upon.
What's the strategic rationale? Why identity? Why CyberArk? And why now?
The strategic rationale, as articulated by Palo Alto's leadership, is deeply, deeply tied to the rapid rise of artificial intelligence.
AI again. How does AI connect to identity security?
The company posits that as AI continues to evolve, these increasingly autonomous AI agents, think of intelligent software bots, automated processes making decisions, acting independently within systems.
Like AI employees, almost?
In a sense, yes. These autonomous agents will increasingly represent the ultimate privileged users within an organization's IT environment. They'll have broad access to systems and data to do their jobs.
And securing them becomes paramount.
Absolutely critical. These AI agents will require incredibly sophisticated identity controls and privileged access management to ensure they only access what they're explicitly authorized to and that their actions are monitored, preventing misuse or compromise if the AI itself is somehow manipulated.
So CyberArk's expertise in privileged access management, PAM, is key here.
Exactly. The plan is to deeply integrate CyberArk's best-in-class PAM capabilities, along with its broader identity security portfolio, across the entire Palo Alto Networks ecosystem, Strata, Prisma, Cortex.
Infusing identity contacts everywhere.
Everywhere. Enabling what they call identity-aware security. Making identity protection pervasive across all security layers, not just a siloed function. The goal is to fundamentally disrupt the legacy identity and access management IAM market by offering this deeply integrated, security-first approach to identity.
Okay, so CyberArk is the big identity play tied to AI agents. What about the Protect AI acquisition? Where does that fit?
Separately, but also crucially important in their AI strategy, was the completion of the Protect AI acquisition, also around July 2025. Protect AI was an innovator specifically focused on securing the AI applications and models themselves.
So securing the AI that customers are building, not just the agents using it.
Exactly. Its technology has now been integrated into Prisma Cloud to form a new offering called Prisma AIRS.
The AIRS, Eddie.
Stands for AI Runtime Security. It offers capabilities like AI model scanning to find vulnerabilities, AI posture management to ensure secure configurations, and even AI red teaming to proactively test AI defenses, ensuring the AI models customers build and deploy are secure from the ground up.
Wow. Okay, when you put all these pieces together, the platform integration, the IBM deal, CyberArk for identity, Protect AI for model security. It feels like the vision is really crystallizing now.
It does start to form a cohesive picture, doesn't it?
All these pieces, especially the big acquisitions, seem to be building towards a potentially powerful self-reinforcing cycle, driven heavily by AI. You mentioned precision AI.
Yes, precision AI. That's the branding they're using for this pervasive integration of AI and machine learning across their entire platform.
What's the mechanism behind it? How does it work?
The mechanism is quite elegant and potentially revolutionary if they can execute it well. Palo Alto Networks aims to leverage the vast, diverse data set collected from across its now deeply integrated platform.
Data from Network, Strata, Cloud, Prisma, Endpoint, Cortex XDR, and now critically, Identity, CyberArk.
Exactly. Leveraging all that rich cross-domain data to train far more sophisticated, more accurate AI models for threat detection, prevention, and response.
Better data leads to better AI.
That's the fundamental principle. The outcome they're aiming for is more precise threat detection, catching real threats faster and more reliably. A significant reduction in those noisy false positives that plague security teams and lead to analyst burnout. And a much higher degree of automation in security response actions.
Making security faster, smarter, and more automated.
That's the promise. And this creates a potentially powerful virtuous cycle, a network effect.
How so?
Superior security performance, driven by this more accurate precision AI, naturally attracts more customers to the platform.
Success breeds success.
Right. These new customers then contribute more data, more telemetry, more diverse threat examples back into the ecosystem, which in turn further improves the AI models, making them even more precise and effective over time.
A self-improving security brain.
Kind of. This data-driven network effect, fueled by the breadth and depth of their integrated platform, could become a significant and durable long-term competitive advantage, something that's incredibly difficult for point solution vendors or even other platform players with less data diversity to replicate.
And it really ties together that whole AI narrative.
It provides a truly cohesive vision for securing the AI era. Look at the pieces again. The IBM partnership allows Cortex XIM to defend the enterprise with AI, using AI to enhance security operations. The Protect AI acquisition enables customers to secure the AI applications they are actively building. And the CyberArk acquisition is explicitly designed to secure the AI agents that will increasingly be acting on behalf of the enterprise.
Defend with AI, secure the AI being built, secure the AI acting for you.
It's a comprehensive end-to-end approach, covering the entire AI lifecycle within the modern organization. It's ambitious, but it's a compelling vision.
That is a huge, incredibly ambitious vision, integrating all that, making it work seamlessly. Wow. So how does a company like Palo Alto Networks actually fuel such ambitious growth plans and these massive acquisition strategies? It really has to come down to their capital allocation strategy, right? Where do they put their money?
Absolutely. Capital allocation is critical for executing a vision like this. And theirs is very clear. The primary uses of capital are significant internal investment in R&D and equally aggressive external investment in strategic M&A.
R&D first. How much are they spending there?
Their R&D expenses are substantial and consistently growing. They spent around $1.6 billion in fiscal 2023, and that rose to over $1.8 billion in fiscal 2024.
Over $1.8 billion just on R&D.
Yeah. This sustained, heavy investment is absolutely critical for organically enhancing their existing Strata, Prisma, and Cortex platforms, developing entirely new security services to stay ahead, and just generally keeping pace with the rapidly evolving threat landscape.
Because in cybersecurity, if you're not constantly innovating, you're falling behind fast.
You're becoming obsolete, exactly. So R&D is non-negotiable.
Okay, and then the M&A front. We've talked about CyberArk and Protect AI.
Right. On the M&A front, they clearly employ a strategic buy versus build approach. They use it to rapidly expand their capabilities and their market reach much faster than they could organically.
Two types of deals, it seems.
Yeah. You see strategic tuck-in acquisitions like Protect AI. Smaller deals bringing in specialized cutting-edge technology in a specific niche relatively quickly.
Adding features or capabilities.
Exactly. And then there are the truly transformative acquisitions like the proposed $25 billion CyberArk deal, which fundamentally reshapes their market position and TAM.
A huge bet.
A massive bet. Now, while this M&A-driven strategy has clearly been highly effective in expanding their TAM and bringing in cutting-edge tech faster than R&D alone could,
there are risks.
It's certainly not without significant risks. Integrating large and complex organizations, especially something the size of CyberArk, presents enormous operational challenges. Management focus gets diverted, cultures can clash.
And the financial risk.
There's always the risk of overpaying for an acquisition, especially in a hot market. And perhaps most critically, there's a risk of failing to actually realize the projected strategic and financial synergies that were used to justify the deal in the first place.
Making 1+1=3 is harder than it looks.
Much harder. And the negative stock price reaction that followed the announcement of the Cyborg deal clearly highlights that investors have very real concerns about the sheer scale of that integration risk, the execution complexity, and the potential shareholder dilution from the stock component of the deal. It's a high-stakes, high-wire act.
That focus on growth and M&A raises an important question. What about direct returns to shareholders? Are they doing things like paying dividends, or is it purely reinvestment right now?
That's a good question. What's in it directly for shareholders beyond stock appreciation? Well, Palo Alto Networks does maintain an active share repurchase program. As of the end of April 2024, they had about $500 million remaining under an existing authorization, and then the board approved an additional $500 million right after that.
So $1 billion authorized for buybacks? That's significant.
It is. However, it's important to understand the primary purpose. This program is mainly used to manage and offset the dilutive effect of the significant stock-based compensation they issue to employees.
Ah, so buying back shares, mostly to counteract the shares given to employees.
Largely, yes. Stock-based compensation is an absolutely key tool for attracting and retaining top engineering talent, top sales talent, in the incredibly competitive cybersecurity labor market. They have to use it.
Especially in Silicon Valley.
Exactly. Given their rapid growth and the intense need for top talent, stock comp is just a necessary part of their compensation strategy. So the buyback program acts as a necessary counterpart to mitigate the resulting impact on the overall share count and earnings per share.
Okay, so buybacks mainly for offsetting dilution. What about dividends?
Consistent with that focus on aggressive growth and reinvestment, the company does not currently pay a dividend.
And no plans to start?
They've explicitly stated they have no plans to initiate one in the foreseeable future. They prefer to prioritize all available cash flow for reinvestment back into the business, primarily R&D and strategic M&A. Growth comes first.
Got it. What about those stock splits they did? A 3-for-1, then a 2-for-1. What was the thinking there?
That's interesting, too. They had a 3-for-1 split back in September 2022. And then another 2-for-1 split in December 2024.
Making the share price lower.
Right. And management explicitly stated that a key reason for these splits was actually to make the stock price more accessible, a lower dollar amount per share, specifically for employee equity awards like restricted stock units, RSUs.
Easier to grant smaller chunks.
Exactly. Breaking it into smaller, more digestible units for grants. This just further underscores how critical that equity compensation is in their human capital strategy, attracting and motivating employees. The splits and the buybacks are linked to that talent strategy.
Okay, so they're investing heavily in R&D, making huge acquisitions. Are these ambitious investments actually paying off efficiently? Are they generating good returns? That's what metrics like return on invested capital, ROIC, and return on equity, ROE, you're supposed to tell us, right?
Exactly. Are they actually creating value with all this capital they're deploying?
How do those metrics look?
Well, it's interesting. For much of its history as a public company, these capital efficiency metrics were actually negative.
Negative returns. Why?
Because of those years of GAAP net losses we mentioned earlier, the company was deliberately investing heavily in growth, sacrificing near-term profitability for market share and scale. So the return part of the calculation was negative.
Okay, but that's changed now with profitability.
Exactly. The recent achievement of sustained GAAP profitability has led to a really significant positive inflection in these key metrics. For the fiscal year ending July 2024, for example, the company reported an impressive ROE of nearly 50%, 49.9%, and an ROIC of over 13%.
Huge numbers, especially the ROE.
And even looking at the trailing 12 months as of July 2025, their ROE was still strong at over 20%.
What's the significance of these positive returns?
The significance here is profound. These ROE and ROIC metrics are now consistently exceeding their estimated weighted average cost of capital, or WACC.
WACC being the blended cost of their debt and equity financing.
Right. Their WACC is estimated to be around 9.4%. So the fact that their returns are now comfortably above that cost of capital
means they're creating real economic value.
It indicates that the company's investments are now consistently generating returns that exceed the cost of the capital they employ. That's a key indicator of long-term sustainable value creation for shareholders. It's a sign their growth is now truly efficient and value additive, not just growth for growth's sake.
That's a major milestone for the company. Now, what about valuation analysis? How does the market value this complex story?
Valuation. Always tricky, especially for high-growth tech. Palo Alto Networks currently trades at pretty elevated multiples compared to the broader market and even the tech sector generally.
Like what kind of multiples?
For example, its trailing price to earnings PE ratio has been north of 90x recently, and its forward enterprise value to sales multiple is over 11x.
Well, sound high.
They are objectively high, yes. These elevated multiples clearly reflect very high investor expectations baked into the stock price. Expectations for sustained double-digit revenue growth, continued margin expansion, and successful execution of that platform and AI strategy.
How does it compare to its direct peers, like Fortinet, CrowdStrike, Zscaler?
It's interesting when you compare it to its peers, PanW is valued kind of like a hybrid.
A hybrid? How so?
It commands a significant valuation premium compared to, say, Fortinet, which analysts would argue is justified by Palo Alto's higher exposure to those faster-growing cloud Prisma and CCOPS Cortex segments, plus its more software-centric, higher-margin overall revenue mix compared to Fortinet's hardware legacy.
Okay, preview to Fortinet makes sense. What about versus CrowdStrike and Zscaler?
Compared to those hyper-growth cloud-native peers like CrowdStrike and Zscaler, Palo Alto Networks multiples, particularly on a forward EV to sales basis, actually appear somewhat more reasonable. They might trade at similar or even higher sales multiples.
But there's a key difference.
The key distinction is profitability. Palo Alto Networks generates substantial GAAP net income and strong free cash flow, whereas CrowdStrike and Zscaler, while growing faster perhaps, have often been unprofitable on a GAAP basis due to being at an earlier stage of hypergrowth, investing heavily in sales and marketing.
So Palo Alto is valued as a more mature, profitable leader, but still with strong growth drivers.
Exactly. It's this unique position, a scaled, profitable market leader that also has significant exposure to high growth segments like cloud security and AI that makes its valuation picture quite nuanced and subject to debate.
Does looking at it as a sum of the parts help?
Potentially, yes. Some analysts argue that a blended valuation might not fully reflect the intrinsic value of its high-growth Prisma and Cortex businesses. If you value those segments independently, using multiples closer to their pure-play, high-growth cloud security peers,
you might get a higher overall valuation.
You might. It suggests potential upside if the company successfully executes its strategy and those segments continue to fire on all cylinders. But that's obviously dependent on execution.
Okay, so if you were watching this company closely, maybe as an investor or just an interested observer, trying to get a read on its future performance, What are the absolute must-watch metrics? Beyond just the headline revenue and profit numbers, what truly tells the story of whether these big bets are paying off?
Yeah, what are the key performance indicators, KPIs, to really focus on? I'd say the single most important metric, one highlighted repeatedly by management themselves and one investors should track obsessively, is the growth of that next generation security, or NGS ARR.
NGS ARR, again, that's Prisma and Cortex recurring revenue.
Exactly. It specifically represents the annualized recurring revenue from the Prisma Cloud and Cortex SecOps AI platforms. These are the core drivers of the company's future growth, the very segments where they're making these aggressive bets on platformization and AI.
So strong growth there validates the strategy.
Absolutely. Strong, sustained growth in NGS ARR. And remember, they guided to a very healthy 31-32% growth for fiscal 2025 that would truly validate their strategic pivot to cloud and AI-driven security and confirm the success of the platformization push. It's number one.
Okay. NGS ARR is crucial. What else?
Alongside that, you absolutely need to closely monitor the billings growth and remaining performance obligation, RPO trends, and importantly, the relationship between them.
Watching that divergence we talked about.
Exactly. While recent billings growth has been muted due to those strategic changes in deal structuring, it still remains a crucial indicator of near-term business momentum and cash flow timing. But investors should really pay attention to how billings growth tracks relative to RPO growth.
What's the ideal scenario?
Continued strong RPO growth. They guided RPO growth to 19-20% for fiscal 2025, would powerfully confirm that the underlying demand and those long-term customer commitments remain healthy, even if near-term billings are volatile due to payment terms. That would support the temporary distortion narrative.
Yeah, and the danger sign.
A simultaneous slowdown in both RPO and billings growth would be a significant red flag. That would suggest a potential fundamental issue with demand, not just timing. That interplay is key.
Got it. What else?
Another key indicator of financial health, and really the engine that fuels their capital allocation strategy for R&D and M&A, is the adjusted free cash flow margin.
How much cash they generate from operations.
Right. The company's ability to maintain and hopefully expand this margin, which they guided to a very robust 37.5-38.0% for fiscal 2025, demonstrates operating leverage and provides the necessary capital to fund their own future. It's how they pay for R&D, acquisitions, and buybacks. Very important for self-sufficiency.
Okay, financial metrics covered. What about operational metrics showing strategy execution?
Good point. Beyond the financials, any management commentary or disclosures on platform adoption and cross-selling metrics should be watched very closely.
Like the number of multi-platform customers.
Exactly. Data points like the number of customers who have adopted two or more platforms, qualitative updates on the progress of that platformization sales motion, attach rates of new subscription services like advanced Prisma modules or XIM to their existing customer base.
Real evidence it's working on the ground.
These metrics provide the most direct, tangible evidence of whether their core strategy is being effectively executed in the field and resonating with customers. Are they actually consolidating vendors onto PAN-W?
Makes sense. Anything else?
Finally, while Palo Alto Networks doesn't consistently disclose this metric officially, which is a point of frustration for some analysts, net revenue retention, or NRR, rates would be incredibly insightful if available.
NRR. Remind us what that measures.
NRR measures the revenue growth specifically from your existing customer base over a period, usually a year. It accounts for both upsells and cross-sells to those existing customers, minus any revenue lost from customers churning or downgrading.
So a rate above 100% means existing customers are spending more each year.
Exactly. A rate above 100% indicates that the revenue growth from your loyal customer base is more than offsetting any revenue you might be losing from churn. It signals strong customer satisfaction, successful cross-selling, and the overall stickiness of the platform.
Has there been any indication of their NRR?
One external source cited a strong NRR figure of around 125% a while back, but the lack of consistent official disclosure is a point of uncertainty. Any official disclosure or even qualitative commentary from management on NRR trends would provide valuable insight into customer health and the success of that platform cross-sell motion.
So NGS, ARR, billings versus RPO, FCF margin, platform adoption, and NRR, those are the key things to watch.
Those metrics, watched together, will be absolutely crucial in validating whether Palo Alto Networks' aggressive strategic moves truly translate into the sustained, profitable growth and market leadership that's currently priced into the stock.
Okay, we've spent a lot of time on the strategy, the platforms, the financials, the potential upside. But no company, especially one operating such a dynamic, competitive market, is without its risks.
Absolutely not. It's crucial to look at the potential headwinds and challenges, too. No investment case is complete without it.
So after all this discussion about their strengths and strategies, what are the major challenges, the key risks that Palo Alto Networks faces moving forward? What could derail this ambitious plan?
Well, firstly, like pretty much all enterprise technology companies, Palo Alto Networks is exposed to the potential impact of macroeconomic headwinds.
The broader economy.
Yeah.
Inflation. Interest rates.
Exactly. Factors like persistent inflation, rising interest rates making capital more expensive, geopolitical instability disrupting supply chains or confidence. These can all cause enterprise customers to scrutinize their IT spending more carefully.
Leading to
potentially longer sales cycles, especially for big ticket items, increased pressure for discounts from procurement departments, and in some cases, maybe even reduced contract values or project deferrals.
Even for security spending, which is resilient.
While cybersecurity spending is generally considered more resilient than, say, spending on new marketing software, it's not immune. Large, multi-year platform transformation deals, the very kind central to Palo Alto Networks' strategy, can certainly be deferred or scaled back in a really challenging economic climate.
And that recent shift to flexible payment terms.
You could actually view that strategic shift toward offering more flexible payment terms for those big deals as a direct response to this increased budget sensitivity among their customers, a tactical move to help close deals in a potentially tougher spending environment.
Okay, so macro risk is one. What else?
Then there's a relentless pressure from increased competition and pricing pressure. We touched on the competitors earlier.
Orbitend, CrowdStrike, Zscaler, Microsoft.
Right. The cybersecurity market is intensely competitive, and it's characterized by incredibly rapid innovation cycles. Palo Alto Networks faces significant pressure from multiple vectors simultaneously.
From the traditional players.
From traditional network security incumbents like Fortinet, who compete very aggressively on price and performance, often winning deals in the mid-market or with more price-sensitive customers.
From the specialists.
From those nimble cloud-native specialists like CrowdStrike and Endpoint and Zscaler and Sassy, who are formidable competitors in their focused domains, they often win on the best-of-breed argument for customers who prioritize a specific capability over platform integration.
And for the giants.
And especially from the hyperscale cloud providers, particularly Microsoft, which is leveraging its immense enterprise dominance to bundle more and more good enough security solutions directly with Azure and Microsoft 365, often at very attractive price points or even included.
Creating significant pricing and integration pressure.
Significant pressure. Palo Alto Networks' positioning as a premium-priced vendor is a key risk here. If competitors, especially Microsoft, are able to offer solutions perceived as comparable or good enough, even if not fully integrated across all domains at a substantially lower total cost of ownership, that could definitely challenge Palo Alto's market share and margins over time.
That integrated platform sounds incredibly appealing, as you said, and it's clearly their core strategy. But I have to imagine getting large, complex enterprises to actually ditch all their existing security tools, many from different vendors, and move everything to a single platform. That can't be easy.
No, it's definitely not easy. And you've hit on perhaps the most critical internal risk area for them.
Which is?
The execution risks inherent in the platform strategy itself. Their entire investment thesis, their whole long-term vision, really rests on successfully executing this complex platform shift in the market.
What makes the execution so risky?
It requires a fundamental transformation in the company's go-to-market motion, in how they sell. They're moving from relatively straightforward, often product-focused sales cycles by this firewall to much more complex, multi-year, solution-oriented sales cycles.
Involving more stakeholders, longer timelines.
Exactly. Sales cycles that involve multiple stakeholders within a customer's organization, network teams, cloud teams, security operations, identity teams, procurement, finance, maybe even the CIO or CEO for the biggest deals. It's a much more consultative strategic sale.
And that recent sharp deceleration in billings growth.
Right. The billing slowdown we discussed clearly highlights the near-term financial trade-offs and the operational complexities involved in making this transition work. There's a very real risk here.
What's the risk?
The risk is that if this big bet on platform consolidation fails to translate over the medium term into significantly higher long-term annual recurring revenue, better customer retention, and ultimately higher profitability,
then the short-term pain wasn't worth it.
Then the company will have sacrificed near-term growth momentum and potentially confused the market for little ultimate strategic gain. That scenario would likely lead to a significant derating of its premium valuation. Execution is everything here.
What about their sales channels? Don't they rely heavily on partners? Does that complicate the platform sale?
That's another layer of execution risk, yes. Palo Alto Networks relies heavily on a vast global network of third-party channel partners, distributors, resellers, integrators for substantially all of its revenue.
And that presents a potential conflict with this complex platform sales strategy.
It can, yeah. Channel partners are often incentivized primarily by sales volume and the simplicity of the sales process, getting deals done quickly.
Selling a complex, multi-year, multi-platform strategic vision is harder than selling a single box.
Much harder. Training and motivating a diverse global partner ecosystem to effectively articulate the value proposition, navigate the complexity, and successfully close these large platform deals is a significant operational challenge. It's a potential point of failure if partners aren't properly enabled or incentivized.
Requires a huge investment in partner training and maybe changing commission structures.
Absolutely. A massive investment in partner enablement, joint business planning, and potentially a realignment of incentives to reward platform wins over just point product sales. It's a major operational lift to get the channel fully aligned with the platform strategy.
And then, layered on top of all that, there's the sheer scale of integrating these massive new companies, especially one as large and established as CyberArk. That must introduce another huge layer of complexity and risk, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. The significant integration challenges from acquisitions, particularly transformative ones, represent a very real and substantial risk.
And CyberArk is the biggest ever for them.
By far. The pending $25 billion acquisition of CyberArk is the largest and undoubtedly the most complex integration project in the company's entire history. It's a true game changer, but also a potential minefield.
What could go wrong during such a massive integration?
Successfully integrating CyberArk's distinct technology stack, its diverse global personnel and unique corporate culture, its separate go-to-market functions and channel relationships, it will be a monumental undertaking.
Diverting management attention and resources.
Huge amounts of management attention and resources will be consumed by this integration for potentially years. And there are always potential issues that can arise.
Such as?
Cultural clashes between the two organizations leading to friction or loss of morale. The loss of key talent from either company who might not want to go through the uncertainty or changes of a massive integration. Disruption to both companies' existing businesses and customer relationships as processes, systems, and sales territories are merged or realigned.
And the biggest risk, not getting the value expected.
And crucially, the potential failure to fully realize those promised strategic and financial synergies, the cross-sell opportunities, the cost savings, the integrated product roadmap that were used to justify such a massive investment in the first place. These are very real risks that could significantly impact the company's performance, its pace of innovation, and its profitability for years to come if the integration isn't managed meticulously. It's a bet the company kind of move in some ways.
Finally, circling back to something you mentioned earlier, what about the human element, the people?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there's just this constant, intense battle for talent in the cybersecurity space.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect a company like Palo Alto Networks, especially with these ambitious plans?
That's a profound systemic issue for the entire industry. And yes, it affects Palo Alto Networks directly and significantly. The ever-present cybersecurity talent shortage is well-documented and very real.
There's not enough skilled people to go around.
Exactly. There's a severe industry-wide scarcity of skilled cybersecurity professionals at all levels, from security analysts in the SOC to cloud security engineers, to identity specialists, to AML experts, to experienced salespeople who understand complex security solutions.
So, fierce competition for talent.
Fierce competition. It means Palo Alto Networks must compete incredibly hard against other security vendors, against the hyperscalers, against large enterprises building their own teams, even against government agencies to attract and, just as importantly, retain the top talent required.
Talent needed for.
Talent needed to fuel their critical R&D pipeline, to staff their technical sales and support teams effectively, to provide professional services, and even to manage and protect their own internal security operations. They need skilled people everywhere.
What are the consequences if they can't win that talent war?
The consequences are significant. High employee attrition, where valuable, experienced employees leave for better opportunities elsewhere, or an inability to attract top-tier talent in the first place. Either of those could directly slow down their pace of innovation.
Hurt their ability to deliver on the product roadmap.
Exactly. It could degrade the quality of their customer support and professional services, impacting customer satisfaction. And ultimately, it could harm their overall competitive position if they can't execute as quickly or effectively as their rivals due to talent constraints.
So this constant battle for talent is really a foundational challenge.
It is. It impacts every single aspect of their operations, from product development right through to customer success, and their ability to execute on these very ambitious strategic initiatives, including integrating massive acquisitions like CyberArk. Finding and keeping the right people is paramount. #outro.
So, okay, after that deep dive, what does this all mean for Palo Alto Networks? We've really unpacked quite a journey, haven't we?
We certainly have a lot to consider.
Their remarkable transformation, starting as that pioneering firewall vendor, evolving into this comprehensive, platform-centric security powerhouse we see today.
From NGFW to a four-pillar platform.
We've seen how they're trying to ride these massive tailwinds, the unstoppable shift to the cloud, the deep integration of AI everywhere, and that undeniable market demand from customers for a consolidated, unified security solutions to finally address that painful vendor sprawl.
They're definitely trying to position themselves right at the confluence of those major trends.
What's the core takeaway here, do you think? The essence of their current strategy?
I think the essence here is their incredibly aggressive bet on platformization, really pushing customers to consolidate onto their integrated offerings, becoming that indispensable operating system for enterprise security.
And fueling that with big, bold acquisitions.
And fueling that with strategic and frankly massive acquisitions like CyberArk for identity and Protect AI for AI model security. These moves are explicitly designed to position them as the essential go-to security partner for the emerging AI era.
Covering security for AI with AI, and the AI agents themselves.
Securing the whole AI lifecycle, yes. Now, while they clearly face significant execution risks, integrating CyberArk won't be easy and intense competitive pressures.
The risks are definitely real.
Their recent financial performance does demonstrate that strong pivot to profitability. And maybe more importantly, those robust long-term customer commitments, particularly evidenced by that strong growth in remaining performance obligations, suggest the underlying platform strategy is resonating, even with the near-term billings noise.
The RPO number gives some confidence.
It provides a key validation point, yes.
You know, the implications of this deep dive, they feel like they go far beyond just one company's business model or stock price.
I agree. It touches on much bigger themes.
Think about how much of our lives, our work, our society is rapidly moving into these digital spaces, how quickly AI is developing and being embedded into everything, and tied to that, how absolutely crucial identity protection, knowing who or what you're interacting with, is going to become.
Identity becomes the new perimeter in many ways.
Exactly. So what happens when every digital interaction, every automated process, every single autonomous AI agent acting on our behalf needs to have a trusted, verifiable digital identity?
How do you manage and secure billions, maybe trillions of digital identities, human and non-human?
How will this reshape not just the cybersecurity industry as we know it, but maybe our fundamental understanding of digital trust, access, and privacy in an increasingly automated, AI-driven world?
It raises profound questions about governance, control, and security in the future.
It's a truly fascinating, maybe slightly scary, future unfolding right before us. And companies like Palo Alto Networks, with these ambitious platform strategies integrating network, cloud, security operations, and now identity, they're actively building the critical infrastructure for that future.
Laying the tracks for the AI era, perhaps.
One integrated platform at a time. Definitely something to mull over.
Yeah.
Until our next deep dive.